All right, let's call the first meeting of the year for the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:33 p.m. Thursday, January 27. Present today so far, we have Vice Chair Schauer, Senator Keel, myself, Chair Myers. That gives us a quorum to conduct business. Quite a few visitors in the House today for testimony. Staffing the committee today is Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records. We have Leo as our moderator. Of course, Michaela Anderson, my committee aide, keeping us running smooth. Quick reminder, please turn your cell phones off just in case. So we got one item on the agenda today. We will be hearing Senate Bill 166, the geo bonds for infrastructure projects. And with that, I'd like to welcome Neil Steiniger from OMB to the table to present the bill, do an overview of the projects. We've also got quite a number of people in the audience or one or two on the phone to answer questions about specific projects as well. So I'd like to ask Mr. Steiniger to go over his presentation, then we'll start in on the specific project, see what kind of questions we have. So with that, Mr. Steiniger, take it away.
Thank you. For the record, Neil Steiniger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Thank you for inviting me here today to speak about SB 166, the governor's proposal for an issuance of geo bonds to achieve key infrastructure projects around the state. So just a little bit about why we're introducing a general obligation bond package before I get into the specific problem or projects themselves. So this geobond package is part of a wider package addressing capital spending for the state. It fits in with priorities and timing and staging of projects to prepare the state for coming infrastructure dollars from the federal government, as well as to, you know, ensure that community needs and projects that, you know, otherwise wouldn't necessarily receive support through the infrastructure bill can be supported and constructed and moved forward within the state. So we have, you know, several different avenues that we're looking to finance capital projects around the state, including traditional capital, supplemental capital appropriations, which will come much sooner, general obligation bond issuance, which is more of a midterm look at the availability for that financing, and then that infrastructure money coming in over the next several years as that comes through the federal bill. So all of these projects fit into that, you know, midterm, you know, issue the bonds and start work on these projects and achieve community needs. What we looked at when we built out this list was needs brought to us by communities around Alaska, needs from the communities that either came from, you know, community governments or municipal councils to achieve those needs that the people are really looking for that aren't going to necessarily be covered through other.
Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I didn't know the statement. You want us to stop and ask questions as we go or wait for a time frame. I just had a question that was a pretty specific, short one.
If we've got something pertaining to the bill as a whole,
it is.
Now would be good.
Okay. So just a quick question. We went through this, obviously, at length last year, and it's my memory failing me with everything else going on right now, but it seemed like a much bigger list. Is this the same list, and it just seems smaller based on what I'm looking at, or does this get pared down?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, we started from scratch on this. There are, you know, some projects here that were on the list last year. I believe Bartlett and Moore Hall and the Craig Harbor, I believe, were the two that carried over. But really, we took a much different approach to building out this bond list. That's why you see that it is shorter. It's much shorter in the number of projects. But still similar in the overall size of a package. And that's because it's looking for more impactful projects and impactful in the communities that they're in and addressing community needs and not necessarily, you know, things off of a state deferred maintenance list.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just thought it seemed a little different. I wanted it for the record because I had to re-baseline myself. I'm like, I remember this list being a lot shorter, or I mean a lot longer, and I'm looking at it, but that doesn't seem right. So I just wanted to make sure we were kind of taking that cue from last year to this year and people that maybe look at this and see it's different, why and what we're doing. Thank you.
Understood. Yes. And thank you for the question. And it is a much different, you know, philosophy in how we put together the bond package and the, you know, the goal that we're trying to achieve here. So a little bit about debt capacity in the state. I believe we have the debt manager available. If there's detailed questions, but just at a real high level, the state has about $1.3 billion in overall debt capacity. This package adds up to $325 million. So definitely well within, the capacity of the state to issue and afford debt. The debt service in the out years, once all the bonds are issued, would be about $20.7 million annually to pay down that debt. Interest rates right now are, still very low. That was a lot of the discussion last year. We continue to be in a low interest rate environment, making this, an affordable option for the state, and just a good way to, leverage low interest rates while we have money in savings earning considerably more than the cost of the debt on these projects. And so with that kind of a general overview, unless the committee has questions on, the general concept behind the bond package, we can start walking through the list of individual projects themselves.
Okay, thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steiner, thanks for the presentation. Maybe broadly on the sort of philosophy and timing, do you have a sense, and not project by project, but in rough terms, how many of these, what share of this can be under construction in a year, 3 years, 5 years?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, there are definitely projects on here that are very pressing immediate needs. They'll be in that near term. You look at some of the fire halls where they're addressing buildings that are, currently marginally useful. And then there's other things that are, much longer term. I think you see in prior geo bond packages, there's kind of a mix like that as well, where, some projects will take several years before they start. It's kind of a timing and staging of projects issue. There are some here that, are more, have a little bit of a longer runway before they be fully executed, but quite a few, it's probably maybe in the half and half roughly range. I couldn't give you a year by year how much would be spent, because there's, naturally unknowns here.
All right.
One more.
Senator Schauer.
Thanks. Just on the Port of Nome deep water port, the $10 million there, we can talk more specifics, but I wanted to ask top level on this one because in some conversations talking to folks, there is obviously DOD has a high interest. I do. I know folks here do as far as national security, other issues, resource development on the northern tier of the state around the Arctic, especially with what China and Russia are doing. So that $10 million, I believe there was quite a bit more that the state had to so-called pony up to get the federal money, because I don't remember the number, like $280 million or something was coming from the federal side, and there was $85 million or $58 million or some number in my head that had to also be pushed by the state to get that and bring in. Does anybody know what that number is and why only $10 million or where we are with that to look at the actual development of that port to get the other money we would need to actually make real progress on getting it developed?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, I'm not off the top of my head remembering the total project cost, and maybe I get a lifeline here behind me, but the idea behind the $10 million is to, help achieve, match to federal money that may come in for the Port of Nome. I know there was recent announcement from the Army Corps of Engineers with money for this project that will require match. So by bonding, we're able to achieve some of that match. The $10 million is looking at some of the kind of initial work, or kind of continued work on the project. But now that we have that Corps of Engineers project coming in, this $10 million can be leveraged much further by providing a match to that project.
We can talk more, Mr. Chairman, when we get to the specifics on it. But there's just I want to make sure I know where the money sits, how much it is, and where we are in the allocation process. Things don't always survive intact. This is kind of an important one on a much broader scope, so I just want to see where we sit with this. So thank you.
Understood. All righty. Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, question for how and when you'd like this line of inquiry. I was asking about the timing because of our environment of rising interest rates. There's discussion about private activity and different interest rates on those bonds. We have the OMB director. Would you like me to go through that now or should we wait?
let's go ahead and go through the financing and the high level stuff, and then right now, and then we'll move into the projects in a bit when that's done.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, and I do see Mr. Mitchell behind you. I guess a question about I'm not remembering the state doing bonds that hit that private activity qualifier in the past. Is that part of our history for geo bonding? Is that something the state has done?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, for a more comprehensive answer, I might actually ask the committee if I can bring forward Mr. Mitchell, just if there has been, you know, he would have a better idea of the history there.
Okay. Mr. Devin Mitchell from Department of Revenue, if you wouldn't mind having a seat. If you could place yourself on the record.
Yes, I'm Devin Mitchell, debt manager for the state of Alaska. And so the description in the fiscal note relates to an analysis that has to occur by for all municipal bond issues that are going to be considered for tax exemption. And at the end of the day, there's private use issues that can lead to a bond issue being categorized as something different than fully tax exempt. Like a school, for example, would always, you would expect that to be tax, a public school, you would expect that to be tax exempt. A road that's open to any traveler would be tax exempt. When you start getting into a facility that has private entities that lease it, like a boat harbor, then that private activity can lead to a need for the bonds to be subject to the alternative minimum tax, which means certain investors will have to pay income tax on the income from those bonds when if they purchase them, and leads to a higher yield, a higher interest rate on them. So some of the projects on the list, and I haven't had our council do a detailed analysis of them, but some of them definitely could have private activity. I think it's a relatively small fraction of the total.
So just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, so then I guess it's a two-part question. Historically, have state general obligation bonds been subject to that in the past? I know you've only been there 25 or 30 years. And then ballpark, what interest rate delta are we looking at?
Through the chair, or Senator Keel, sorry. The private activity rules have evolved over time, and I think there's been a tightening of the types of projects that would be classified as being subject to the alternative minimum tax. And so we've been able to avoid, for the most part, having AMT series of bonds on the geo level. For other state issues like the Alaska International Airport System, we have AMT issues for terminal type projects. Airside type projects would be non-AMT or governmental. So there's a couple of airports in here that if it's airside improvements you're talking about, those would be governmental, fully tax exempt. And if they're terminal type projects where you're going to have private entities, airlines, or concessionaires leasing space, then they could be subject to the alternative minimum tax, and the same for the harbors. So we haven't had a pattern of issuing AMT bonds in the past, but it's not unusual at all. And we see it all the time at the municipal level in the state of Alaska, because it's just a common occurrence. For ports here in Juneau, you have the port bonds, harbor bonds, airport, and all of them have issued as AMT, as an example again. As far as interest rates, we remain in a as previously stated, in an extraordinarily low interest rate environment. I think we're in the bottom of all interest rates of all time. We're in the bottom quartile, and really in the bottom 10%. There has been a trend of rising interest rates over the course of the last year. It's been focused more on the short end of the yield curve rather than the long end. And the yield curve is comprised of, when you sell bond issues, you have principal maturing in each year over the course of the bond issue. And each one of those principal maturities will have an interest rate correlated to its year of maturity. And so it generally rises as you go out on the yield curve. So on the short end, we've seen maybe over the course of the last year, something closer to 0.5% rise in interest rate. And on the long end, the 30-year, something more in the line of 15 or 20 basis points or 15 or 20 hundredths of a percent. And so at this point, looking forward, there is an expectation. I think everybody's well aware of inflationary pressures and concerns about the cost of living and rising interest rates. There is an expectation that rates could rise over the course of the next year. And the consensus view, I mean, all the banks put out projections of what interest rates might do in the future, isn't that severe again. On the short end, maybe the interest rates would rise as much as 1% or 1.5%. And that's kind of on the outlier end. And on the long end, maybe 25 to 50 basis points. The interest rates that were used in the fiscal note were around 50 basis points higher than what we might be able to achieve today. And that's in part because of that that rising interest rate environment we find ourselves in and wanting to hedge against that in the future.
Senator Schauer?
Okay. Two questions and a comment. First of all, this is why I became a pilot, not an accountant. I would have to take a Red Bull to be able to do what you just did and talk your way through that whole thing and survive it. The questions are, can you illuminate a little further what the bottom 10%, you referred to that about 3 minutes ago, and you're talking where we were in the bottom 10%, just what that means for me in plain English? I actually don't know exactly what you're getting at. That's not my lane. And then the second part is, just briefly, you don't have to go into expounding very far, but just your thoughts on knowing that, you know, we're talking that this is where we are today, but what if there's war in Ukraine tomorrow? That changes everything. What if we lose our status as world reserve currency status, and then what happens then? And I'm not asking for, like I said, a 10-minute dissertation. You don't need to do that. My question is, relative to this bond, how this affects us in the state, these things we can't control that are significant ones, what does that do to us if those things were to take place based on where we are in this process? I only need a minute or two, but I think it's kind of important because we're at very tenuous times. And this is one of the reasons I'm so reticent to get into the bond and put money on essentially the credit card, is because we have to pay it back. And when things get crazy, where are we going to be? So I just wonder if you could illuminate on those two things, please. Thanks, sure. Mr. Chair.
So through the chair, Senator Schauer, your first question, 90% of the time interest rates would be higher. So you'd be paying more. So that means favorable. Yeah. As far as world events and the expectations on interest rates of the future, that's obviously concerns for everybody. But the state's in kind of a unique position. I deal a lot with credit of the state and trying to position the state to have the most advantageous analysis as possible. And so we have the unique strength of having the permanent fund, which is a broad-based diverse asset allocation fund invested, as implied by the name, on a permanent basis, so a very long term. And so we're naturally hedged against world events in some ways, in as much as we have that diverse investment portfolio that you would expect to have rising returns if interest rates do spike, not necessarily right away, but in the mid or longer term. And so if we're paying more on interest expense, we should be earning more. So that's one thing. And the tax exempt advantage of issuing bonds that do qualify for tax exemption, even if they're subject to the alternative minimum tax, is a significant advantage as well, that you have a natural arbitrage play. That is, if you had the money in the bank and invested in similar securities, similarly lived, that were taxable, you would make more money than you paid in interest expense. Obviously, that takes a lot of fiscal discipline, but just on its face, it's a smart financial move to have a debt program when you have access to tax-exempt financing.
Very brief follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
When does this get locked in for us? I asked the same question. We go down that path. If it's not locked in and these things change, then what? Where are we?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, it's not locked in until we sell the bonds. And so we're exposed to interest rate risk and credit risk and tax risk to the extent that things change in the future. So we're exposed to future events. That said, if there were events, my experience has been, and I don't know, Neil maybe will kick me, but my experience has been that a lot of times geo bonds take a long time to realize maturity as far as project development expenditure proceeds. The 2012 Transportation Act, we sold the last issue of over $100 million in 2010. And so it's been, and there's still money sitting there, so a decade of time to spend the money. Certainly, interest rates can change drastically in 5 or 10 years. Again, it's a matter of that it's a thoughtful way to accommodate a capital program that has a built-in tax advantage, financial advantage, versus using cash. And so it's worth considering on a conservative basis. Again, you don't want to overborrow, but certainly the state isn't in that situation currently.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that. I just wanted that on the record because there are some concerns I have with the timeline and where we sit, and I think it's something we should be considering, not because of the broader, and I know I'm asking for speculation here, but I think there's a lot of things sitting here with us that make us particularly vulnerable, so I just wanted that on the record. Appreciate
All right, thank you. Okay, seeing no other questions, let's go ahead and start in on the projects themselves. So step one here, I see Craig Harbor on the list. Senator Keel, I believe that's down in your neck of the woods. Or not quite. That's right. That's lower side.
A little south of me, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, well, closer to you than me. We'll put it that way.
Mr. Chairman, were you looking to start with presentations on them or just straight to questions?
Well, I wasn't sure if you had a specific presentation on each of these. We didn't do that. We didn't have that last year. I was looking more towards questions. But if you've got specific things you want to say about it, you definitely speak up, Mr. Snyder.
Chairman Myers, I could walk through and just explain very briefly in two sentences what each project is, if that works, or we could just walk through and go to questions.
That
I don't have a grand presentation on each one.
Yeah, just a sentence or two on each as to what exactly we're spending money on. That would be, I think that'd be sufficient.
Mm-hmm. So the Craig Harbor is $8.3 million. This here is matching to other funds available to Craig to complete the project. They need the match. They need the additional money in order to actually, you know, move forward with the project. But there's other monies going towards this project that help support the overall cost.
Okay. So this is a project that's already been started then?
Chair Myers, it's a project that the city's purchased property and, you know, has done planning activities. They've found access to some money for the project, but just require the $8.3 million to have enough money to commit and do the rest of the activity on the project. So there has been some activity here.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess a question since Senator Schauer asked about last year's bond proposal. As I recall, last year this was proposed at something closer to $4.5 million. I think that dollar amount met a sticky fate when the legislature appropriated it. So it's almost doubled. And it's proposed again by the administration. What has changed in those two things, price tag and administration's position?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, looking to fully support the remaining funding needed for the project. As you recall, last year there were quite a few more projects on that list, as was referenced earlier in this presentation. And so, you know, not every project received, you know, full funding to complete the project, and there's some expectation of other monies coming in. This is the full amount necessary to complete the project. The veto actions in the budget last year, you know, we're putting this forward and this geobond package similar to last year because there's an opportunity, as Mr. Mitchell spoke to take advantage of interest rates and arbitrage ability of the state and the ability to support a capital program under low interest rates while we're earning money for more. And so the ability to finance through general obligation bonds is why we're able to support a larger capital investment. And so when some projects that were on that geobond list from last year came into the operating budget or the capital budget reserve supported by unrestricted general funds, they weren't taking advantage of that interest rate opportunity. And, you know, we are supporting the financing mechanism as a way to get there. We don't necessarily think it's as prudent to spend unrestricted general fund that could be earning money to pay down that debt at a higher rate. So really it came down to the financing mechanism, not, you know, any issue with the project itself.
All right. Senator Schauer?
Two questions, smaller than bigger. And I should have asked the bigger one early on. I meant to on the top and I forgot. But the smaller question is, just from a perspective of the previous discussion we had and the question was asked, could you, as we go through each of these, kind of throw out the timeline part of it, just because we are discussing this and how far it goes out? Like, is this an immediate, like you were saying, I'm just requesting that if you do that for each one, when the money's allocated, when this is going to take place, and what it ties to other things, just so we have an idea, just a little bit more detail, Mr. Chair, for that purpose. And then the bigger question I meant to ask and forgot was, based on what's now happening with the potential infrastructure money, and a budget has to be passed and other things first, but with that amount of money coming in, my generic question to the administration is, why are we looking at a geo bond if we're looking at billions of dollars coming into the state from the federal government? And I know it's not all tied equally. I know that some of it's dedicated for certain things, et cetera, and there's rules and limits that may be on it, but why are we proceeding with this now, knowing that we, you know, for a $300 million bond, we're potentially getting billions coming in?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, on some of these projects, I may not be able to give a fully robust description of the project timeline. I think some of the, folks in municipalities that are managing these projects, if you want some more, kind of staging of project information, we can get that back to you. There's more, backup for some of these projects that came from the communities that has a little more information on timeline, but I'll try and speak to it when I can. On your other question, though, about the infrastructure bill, one thing I'd like to note for the committee and for those watching, I want to make sure that there's a, fairly accurate expectation of what that infrastructure bill is going to bring into the state. It does bring a lot of money into the state, and we've seen with, the Corps of Engineers project that was project list that came out recently. That's a lot of large projects for the state, a lot of good projects for the state, but they're being prioritized and set at a federal level. It's the federal government making the decisions on where to allocate that money for the most part, with the exception of things like the surface transportation program or village safe water, where there's these traditional programs where the state has discretion in the money. But a lot of the new money is really being directed by the federal government and doesn't really have an opportunity for the state to make state prioritization decisions for where we think projects, infrastructure investments in capital assets are appropriate and best for the state. This geobond package gives us the opportunity to make those, Alaska-centric prioritizations rather than having to rely upon the federal government to make those prioritizations for us. So that's one benefit. Another benefit is some of those, federal allocations of money are going to take some time before they work their way through the process. Some of those projects are things that aren't necessarily, ready to go right away. They may take time, or they may be, just part of a traditional project mix that we've always had, and it happens to be in this infrastructure bill. So this allows us to invest in Alaska-specific projects at a time in projects that have a timeline that we think can start to be executed. So there's a staging of projects and money going out the door from both the regular capital budget, this geobond package, and then some of those infrastructure projects can be set at the federal level. I don't know if that was quite the answer you're looking for.
We never get exactly what we want, right? This is politics. One quick follow-up clarification, Mr. Chair. So with that being said, my understanding, and again, I don't have all the details, so I'm asking it not as a gotcha, but more as just information, is that we don't know where all those things are going yet. We don't have all that information. So if we don't know yet from the federal government what the guidance is, where the money's going to be, and how we have the ability to move it, is it wise, and this is a policy question you can't answer, I get that. I'm asking this rhetorically. Is it wise for us to be bonding for a third of $1 billion when we don't know for sure yet if we can use some of that on some of these projects and other things? I guess it's just a generic question, Mr. Chair. Again, because of the risk and the vulnerability that I was highlighting before, I have concerns that maybe we shouldn't be doing this yet, or we should be looking at a different timeline because we don't know those things. So, again, that's policy. You can't address that, and I appreciate it. I just want to kind of get that discussion on the record, Mr. Chair, that I think we maybe we're a little bit too soon, but that's for a different discussion.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. After that, I don't see any other questions from Craig Harbor. So we'll go ahead and move on. Next one I see is the Craig Mariculture Infrastructure. You've got just a two-sentence description.
Yes, Chair Myers, the Craig Mariculture there's a processing facility. The Southeast Conference has received a grant from the federal government. This provides for some match in support of that project as well, and helps address also policy considerations of looking to invest in things like mariculture and agriculture for future food security for the state of Alaska. So we see this as building towards a more sustainable Alaska in the future.
So along those lines, then, going back to our discussion on the bonds and whether or not they'd be tax exempt or not, is this one of the ones that would fall under the AMT or fall under the private and not tax exempt at all?
Chair Myers, I would defer to Mr. Mitchell on that question. As he said, these haven't necessarily had a robust analysis from their counsel to know for sure. But I would defer, if you'd like a more direct answer, to Mr. Mitchell. Yeah.
For the record, Devin Mitchell again, and Chair Meyer, I think you're on the right track, that to the extent the mariculture folks weren't nonprofits, they were for-profit, and they're using a facility, then it could be subject to an AMT categorization. Similar to a boat harbor, which is, you can go walk down a public boat harbor, you can go walk down to a Harris or Aurora Harbor here in Juneau, but those slips are leased to private individuals or businesses. And so therefore there's this private activity that results in that tax status being slightly worse than fully governmental, where it's a public building.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. All righty. Seeing no further questions on that one. All right. So we've got next up, I see, is the Kenai River Bluff Stabilization Plan.
Yes, Chair Myers, this is an overall $30 million project. The $6.5 million matches to both federal funds and $4 million that the city itself has been able to find.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we get just a brief sketch of this project? How many river miles are we armoring here? Sheet pile, armor, rock? Well, just rough ballpark.
Feel free to call a lifeline if you have one.
This one I would probably want to call a lifeline. It might be, I'm not sure if I have a lifeline available for this one. It might be just something to come from the community. I don't know the exact number of miles of riverbank that this would be stabilizing, if that's a question.
Something for follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Fair enough. Thank you. All righty. Seeing no other questions. So the Ketchikan Airport Terminal.
Yes, Chair Myers, the Ketchikan Airport Terminal is, while it is a state-owned runway, the terminal itself is managed by the city. And so this would be a grant to the city to do improvements on the terminal. And the city itself is bringing money to the table as well to accomplish the entire project. My understanding is it is, a somewhat in-progress project there in Ketchikan.
Understood. Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. As I look at the backup sheet, most of this looks like the sort of thing that is appropriate to a state bond type package, because it wouldn't qualify for federal AIP funds. I did wonder about runway adjacent surfacing and whether that might be AIP eligible. Do we have anybody with airports here who could help with that?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I actually believe possibly if with the chair's permission, bringing the Commissioner of Transportation up might be able to speak to that.
Of course. Commissioner Anderson?
Thank you, Chair. And for the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the Chair, Senator Keel. Yeah, typically runway projects or taxiway type projects are eligible for airport improvement program funds. But there can be advantages to state funds on those, and that whenever we have these state funds, we can do things quicker, typically due to the federal processes. A lot of times there's many steps that you have to go through to get to the construction of a project, whereas state funds, a lot of times you can combine steps together and do them concurrently, which allows, you know, projects to get completed sometimes much quicker, years quicker. So I hope that answers your question.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I'll probably ask the same thing about other airport projects. I think there are a lot of steps worth 93 or 94% federal funding.
All right. Seeing no further questions on that one. Next up, I know exactly what I'm going to be asking on this one, the Kinnick Arm Port Infrastructure. Mr. Steiniger.
Yes, so this project is $175 million for Kinnick Arm Port Infrastructure. This includes both the Port of Alaska in Anchorage as well as Port McKenzie. There's not a specific distribution between the two ports, but we're looking for here is coordination between the two ports to address port infrastructure in the region, and to, you know, address it between both of the ports to look at what's best for the region in terms of port infrastructure, and bring those two together rather than addressing those projects separately.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you. So let's ask question number one. Who's the regional port authority that's going to allocate these funds?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, there's not currently a regional port authority.
Exactly. First question. Because we have a pretty ongoing debate, battle, whatever you want to call it, between the Mat-Su Borough and between Anchorage for this. This is an ongoing issue. As the chairman himself knows, I have invited us to have a broader discussion with those two entities here in transportation and state affairs to have a discussion about this very fact. So I have some questions about this allocation for this because, quite frankly, this is going to be just basically throwing fuel on the fire without any real direction on how this is going to play out between those bodies because we don't have port authority. And everybody, when I say everybody, those two entities are fighting for their slice of the pie. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'm not really sure how this one's going to play out and how we can say that because I don't know where this goes and who does what. We don't have an agreement yet on how that's going to play out. So this is a bit tenuous to me on having $175 million that, you know, when I believe it's a billion plus that Anchorage says it needs and billion plus that the Mat-Su says it needs so to do this. So I don't know, Mr. Chairman. I'm struggling on this one because I don't know without further guidance, this being, you know, nearly two-thirds of the entire geo bond. And I'm not saying this money isn't needed for the port and ports to upgrade it because we know that requirement is there and most of our food comes through it. This is asking for a fight right here and causing tension. So I think we should probably, we almost need to drill down a little farther on this and figure out how this needs to be allocated or get an answer before we do this one, because quite frankly, this is not a bridge to nowhere. This is a money throw out there and let the, you know, hit the pinata, let the candy fall on the ground, let the kids go fight each other over it. So there's some issues with how this is set up right now, Mr. Chairman. And I don't even know where to go with it, quite frankly. I don't know if the administration has a position on that, but we can't say the regional port authority that doesn't exist is going to allocate these funds. We don't have one. So what do we do? I don't have an answer for that, and apparently you guys don't either. This isn't a good idea, guys. We need to do something different than this.
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, you referenced bringing the two entities before the committee to have a discussion on that. On coming to consensus about what's right for the region. And that's really, you know, what we want to see happen. We want to see the entities that are in charge of those two ports come together, make some decisions about what's best for the entire region rather than, you know, fight over the dollars. We want to see, you know, goal-oriented collaboration between the two entities as we move forward to something that is beneficial to the region, to the entire state of Alaska. And so I think the steps that the committee is taking to bring those entities in, that's what we want to see. We want to see that collaboration and continue down that work and, you know, put money towards these projects, but with a goal in mind and with a direction that, you know, creates benefit for the region. The questions that you're asking are good, and bringing those entities in to talk through the solutions is, the purpose of having this project out here?
Mr. Chairman, a very brief follow-up. So what I suggest is, because as you can tell, I'm not generally a fan of this, the whole package to begin with, but for different philosophical reasons and risk, perhaps we change this for now, and I would ask maybe you consider it. I know this may sound silly to some, but as opposed to saying the Regional Port Authority that does not exist is going to do something, because they can't do it if they don't exist, maybe we say something to the effect of concurrent to a memorandum of understanding or something else between the entities. For how this money is going to be divvied up between those projects, because we're going to have to get them together, and they're going to have to figure this out. We cannot rely on something to divvy up $175 million that doesn't exist yet. So I have a lot of concerns about that, because you're literally creating tension with this and a massive food fight. So I think we need to do something maybe a little bit different. I'm open to suggestions, Mr. Chairman, but that's we're going to have to change that a little bit, or else this is a setup for – anyways.
Yeah. Well, Senator Shaw, I always appreciate your metaphors.
Yeah.
All righty. Seeing no further questions or comments on this one at the moment, move on to the Kodiak Fire Station.
Yes, so this is $15 million for the Kodiak Fire Station. The fire station was damaged in the 2018 earthquake and continues to be in a state of disrepair. Location-wise, it also is in the tsunami zone, which is challenging as a emergency response location.
All right. Thank you. Sorry. That's all right.
Not really.
All right. Seeing no questions on this one, relatively straightforward.
Mr. Chairman, one brief question.
Same thing,
just the generic one, if you have it. And you may have said it, and I apologize, I was reading something, so a little off topic, my fault. I was distracted. Is this all that is needed, or was there a matching again? And I apologize, I didn't read it fast enough because I was distracted. Like I said, I won't do that again, but is this enough for the entire thing, or was there matching or anything else that had to happen? Bottom line, that
through the chair, Senator Shower, I'll have to get back to you.
Yeah. Okay. Let me know, please. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Same song, second verse, Nenana Fire Hall.
So this is another fire hall, Nenana Fire Hall. It's $5 million. While it wasn't damaged in the earthquake like the previous fire hall, it is in very poor condition and in need of replacement.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, the city of Indiana contacted me about this one a little bit recently. Senator Schauer?
No, it's the same thing. This one I have seen, Mr. Chairman. And I am, again, I'm not against the projects. We need to be doing it. I have a question of the why, how this method. But that being said, I will say for the record on this one, this hall is kind of falling apart and is not very effective for their fire station in that area and what it serves. And it's a pretty remote-ish broad area off the Parks Highway. So this one is a... from a perspective of at least the need for it is definitely valid. It's worth.
Thank you, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur. I saw some photos of this fire hall, and it's pretty worn out. It's almost as worn out as the one in the Haynesboro, which I guess leads me to question how the list was put together in terms of public safety facilities, municipal public safety facilities with serious needs.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we definitely looked at, public safety needs or needs in the different regions and tried to accommodate what we could while staying within, a target range of roughly a third of the bonding capacity and, trying to maintain some regionality in the projects that we put forward. So there's no intimation that we're solving every public safety need in this geobond package, but there are a couple that we were able to accommodate.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. No further questions on that. Moving on to topic we already touched on a bit, Port of Nome.
Thank you, Chair Myers. Port of Nome, my lifeline came through, so I do have some answers to Senator Shower's questions. So the overall cost for all three phases is $642 million, $417 million of which would be federal receipts, $225 million non-federal receipts. Just phase one is $397 million, $250 million coming from federal receipts. This $10 million is a start towards the match portion of that project. There's also some investigation into whether we can, accommodate some more of the match with in-kind activities. So this is looking to try and work with Corps of Engineers project that was announced from the infrastructure bill in order to build towards the match required for that project to go forward.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you. So out of the $275 million non-fed, this is $10 million of that. So we have $265 million to go. Is that true?
Correct. And in phase one, the non-federal portion is $147
million. $147, thank you. So we're $137 million short on phase one. Mr. Chairman, a follow-up to that. Mm-hmm. So do you know what the corporations or the borough or the region up there, because again, I go back to maybe your lifeline had that, it wasn't briefed on what they had put up. I understand there was an amount they said locally that they were going to be able to push forward to this and then looking for the state for the rest of it to help get us there. Do you know where we are in that breakdown for this? $10 million doesn't go real far to me on this one, depending on timeline.
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, yep. $10 million does help get the project started, certainly, but obviously it doesn't go the entire way. I don't know exactly how much is coming from the community locally. That didn't come in on my lifeline, but yes, more funding will be needed for the project to be completed.
Two more quick follows, Mr. Chair.
On this one. Senator Schauer.
The federal match of phase one is how much of the $147 million required?
So $250 million comes from the feds in phase one, and then the $147 million is the remaining portion.
That was the part I didn't catch. And then the second part of that question, or I guess maybe perhaps it's more of a comment, the reason I asked, I would like to get, if we could get more from the lifeline or information on this one from the Fed to the local and the state, the portion of this. The reason I asked is I'm a little key, as everybody should be, on the bridge to nowhere. What I'd hate to see is we start a project and we get a $10 million, 10-foot concrete dock, and then we're done because they can't match or we can't or there's another issue. So I would like just a little more fidelity, if I could, on this one, because I really do believe this is a good thing. And I believe it's economic development, it's national security issues. There's a host of reasons why I'm very key on this particular one. But what I don't want to do is set us up in a place where we can't get there from here and it falls apart. Because this is this is the kind of stuff we should be looking at. This is a 50-year thing. This is not just now, not just in the next 5 years. This is a 50-year project for security and Arctic strategy and other things that are taking place, including the state's resource development and economic development, private development. So I would like, if we could, Mr. Chairman, to maybe for a request as a transportation committee to get more fidelity on this particular one from those breakdowns so we have a better feel for where we stand, if that's possible.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Moving on to the Palmer Municipal Airport.
Yes, so this is $6.5 million for the Palmer Airport for taxiway work and... that's kind of the summary there. $6.5 million. It's specifically runway 1028.
Okay. All right. And sure. Senator Keel.
As predicted, I noticed that there's $500,000 of federal aviation money in there already. It's the same sort of question. What portion of this do we think is federal airport improvement program eligible?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, similar to the answers related to the Ketchikan Airport given by the Commissioner of Transportation, using state money here allows for more flexibility and expediency in airport projects. So that is why we are looking to use geobonding for some of these airport projects. It allows for the project to move a little bit quicker and be state directed.
Maybe on this project, we could find out whether that remains the case when you've already got Federal Aviation Administration money in it.
Commissioner, do you, I don't know if you have the information to respond to that or if we're going to have to do that one later.
Yeah, for the record, Ryan Anderson, Commissioner Designee, U.S. Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the chair, I'm Senator Keel. There are a lot of advantages when you have state funds, even mixed in with federal airport funds, and how you can combine projects and get work done. A lot of times on federally funded projects, the scopes are very strict, in what we're allowed to do. And so if something comes up that was after the fact, at times it's quicker to use some state funding to take care of those problems rather than going back through a process and restarting, you know, the environmental documents and these things that you'd have to go through to finish those. So there's some advantages there. Other advantages with the state funds would just be that that flexibility, you know, the timing of it. If depend, and I don't know the details of where this project would fall in our in the overall availability of AIP funding, because all those projects across the state, I think we're over 230, well, we're probably much more, over 230 airports. They're all competing for these funds. And so the state funds, you know, if they're approved through a GO bond, now that airport, you know, that work will get done at the time when the GO bond funds are available, and they wouldn't have to wait, you know, for that priority system through the AIP program to get that work done if the project was out there a few years.
Well, Senator Keel. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Commissioner, this the taxiway work is going to be AIP competitive and not AIP entitlement?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'm not familiar on this one exactly how that is, but typically, you know, there's discretionary AIP funding, there's entitlement funding. Depending on where it falls, it would be the answer. I don't have that information.
Mr. Chairman, just thank you. It might be worth finding that out so we know if it's competitive or not. I guess just by way of a comment, I'm game to see the Palmer Airport expand as Palmer grows. But given the OMB director's initial discussion that these are projects that are worth doing, not with UGF, but with sort of bond money where we have an arbitrage earn, the difference between 6% of the project, which would be the match to federal AIP, and 100% of the project, you're not going to make that up on arbitrage.
Right.
Thank you.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you. A little bit different, but on this one, and I'm not meaning to put her on the hot seat, but for Carolyn last year when she was up here briefing, we asked a question, and this actually just came from this. So it kind of popped back in my head from last year. I'd like to get some clarification on it. And you perhaps have fixed that in this list. This is not for the commissioner yet. So back to the administration on this. There was a question that came up, and she had answered us based on direct questions. And like I said, at the time, I was hoping we didn't get her in trouble. But she was giving us very good answers on what was happening, because the question came about that some of these projects were actually already funded. And why were we funding projects that were really already funded and things that weren't ready? And there was some question on that. So can you validate and tell us today that every one of these projects does not fall into the category that we kind of found out last year, that some of them already had funding, future stuff, et cetera, that every one of these is not that case? So as we discussed and asked last year, that they are, in fact, just ready to go right here, right now. There's not future funding. There's not Fed funding. The stuff that was asked, it kind of generated from that question. Is that, I want to know on the record, is that the case or not?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, the issue last year was that several of the airport projects were pulled off of the AIP list, but already had been slotted in for funding within AIP. That is not the case in these situations. Palmer Airport, this was a request that came from the community for funding. So we are providing funding for a request that came from the community. Some of these projects have other, you know, sources of funding from federal funding. You know, for example, the Port of Nome, we talked about, there's an Army Corps of Engineers project. It does not fully fund the project, though. So, you know, for most of these projects, there is other money that is being supplemented by general obligation bonds to achieve the entire project. So it's not fully funded projects, maybe partially funded projects that we're finishing the funding.
Senator Sheriff, you've got a follow-up, just a quick note for the committee. If we've got some other airport questions, I was just informed that John Binder from DOT, who manages their airports, is available for questions as well.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, the point of that was just, I wanted that on the record because that came out as kind of a shock last year. I think we all assumed these were things that, you know, we needed to do or nothing was going to happen. And as it turned out, some of them actually would have happened anyways. They were already on the schedule. So what I think some of us were a little taken aback by was that, well, then we didn't necessarily have to do what we were doing in some of the bonding. So I'm asking the administration the question on the record that in this case, we do need this. It has to happen. It's not something that's already going to be scheduled and happen without this. So I did not understand that process last year until it came out, and we had some questions asked that highlighted that. So I'm making sure that this time around, smaller list, you guys have clearly seen it, you know, really scrubbed it, and got us to this level. I want to know that that same question, the same questions we asked last year, are in fact the case this year. And so there's no question of that now. That's the point.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Seeing no further questions on that project. Next up, we have the Seward Freight Dock expansion.
Mm-hmm. So this is the Seward Freight Dock is $5 million. This dock is nearing the point of unusability. You can see in the project write-up, they project that by the end of 2024 that the dock itself will be unusable if there's not maintenance and improvements and expansion of and effectively reconstruction of portions of the dock.
All right. And I see on the project backup here that we've already funded a little bit. We've put some money towards this project in the last few years, in 2017 and in 2019. Is this enough to actually put it back into full service, or is this just another down payment on a longer-term project?
Chair Myers, you can see kind of some of the discussion of the specific parts of the dock that will be expanded and reconstructed here. I'm not going to say that, you know, there will never be, you know, more work needed on the dock, but this, you know, accomplishes significant portions of the need to get the dock back to a usable state.
All right. Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I have a question for you, a little bit broader. Commissioner or somebody else may want to come forward to this. I'm sorry. I need to get back and forth all the time, but my question is kind of this. We had briefed this both in finance a few years ago. It's something I've been paying attention to. This is kind of my lane on the logistical side of things, food security, just security for the state. We don't feed ourselves and supplies coming inbound. One of the things that came out of some of these briefings and discussions were the fact that, well, what's the status of the railroad? Can we even move anything if it comes to the port and sewer? Because we suggested this a few years ago in finance. We're like, well, actually, we can't really do that because the capacity isn't there. They don't have the cars that they need, the rail cars, et cetera. My question is kind of centered around, are we going to spend this money on something that, quite frankly, is more of a spread the love money down there to Seward, but we're really not going to be able to use it? So this is, Mr. Chairman, this is a little bit more maybe of a, like I said, perhaps a policy question directed at the commissioner. If he could give us the thoughts on that, because I am a little concerned on spending money on one that, you know, sounds good on the surface, and ports are important, obviously, but there was countering information from others that discussed it wasn't going to be that usable. So I would like to know from the administration is if we're going to spend money on this, is it something that's actually usable? Or are we, and wasting is not the right word, but are we perhaps misallocating resources where they would be better going to Whittier, for example, or to the Port of Anchorage or whatever we're talking about? Does that make sense as a question? Mr. Chairman, if we could, I know I'm asking for slightly off the monetary side, but if we're going to spend the money on it, I'd like to know that, you know, we're not spending it in a place where we've been told previously it may not be effective.
Believe the phrase would be dock to nowhere, then?
Perhaps dock to nowhere, yes. That's your pun this time, not mine. So.
And Mr. Steiniger? I don't know if you've got a lifeline that can address this directly or if you need to get back to us.
Yeah, I think we may need to get back to you. I think there's a much, you know, broader question about, you know, I think the question you're asking is a broader question outside of just the scope of this project, but how it fits into, you know, kind of the overall infrastructure down in Seward. And I think, yeah, we'd have to get back to you with some more, just more information about how this, once this, these improvements are made, how it will be implemented and, you know, how it fits into that.
I'm looking to see if the commissioner and them would have any comments. If not, totally fine. Get back. But if they have a thought on that, I'd love to hear it. If you got it now while we're here. If not, okay.
If you've got an answer for it, we'd like to hear it.
Jesse had a question.
And for the record, Ryan Anderson, Commissioner Designee, Alaska Department of Transportation Public Facilities, through the chair, since Vice Chair Schauer. There's definitely the value there to enhance the dock structure there for the railroad. I mean, that's a real project. That's something that's needed to make sure that resiliency is there piece, you know, for to keep the freight and whatnot moving. So I don't have the details on that project. I think we would defer to the railroad for, you know, how that dock fits in terms of the bigger picture that Mr. Steiniger talked about. But these are real projects, you know, throughout the state, these types of repairs.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make a comment.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you. I don't disagree. Like I said, I'm not against projects and building things. I agree we need to do them. My question relates, so it sounds like we're going to need maybe some information from somebody else, or if we can get it back, I'd like to know. It's hard for me to vote for it if I know we're going to spend money on it, but it's not effective because the railroad doesn't have what it needs, and they're not going to. They literally told us that. We don't have the rail cars, can't get them, we're not going to have what we need to move it. So, okay, well, then I'm like, why are we doing it? That's what I would like to know. If it's something that really fits, that's okay, and I see, and that's fine. But I was told something different, and I would like to know that once we do this and we're using that port, that we're going to see rail traffic actually move in, and they're not going to come back 3 years from now when it's done and go, yeah, you know, it's nice, but we can't use it. That's all I'm asking, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was just a question about sort of scope and scale and making sure I understand this right. The next dock over is the sort of cruise dock, and that's supposed to go, I think from 600 foot to 1,000, and it's got an uplands building. This is supposed to go from, I think, 700 foot to 1,000, supposed to get 100 foot wider. The cruise project, I think, is $70 million. And this, we've got five in the past and five here, is going to make it go. What am I missing in what sounds like roughly comparable scale projects, but a massive difference in price tag? Just help me with the scale.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. You know, not being familiar with the other project you're talking about, I don't know that I can speak to the difference between the two, just not being familiar with that project. You know, I can speak to you the, as you mentioned, the, you know, the points of the scope of this project, you know, expanding from the, you know, 620 feet out to 1,000 feet to get into deeper water. You know, that's what this project's doing. I don't know that I can compare to another project I'm not familiar with.
The downside of having the railroad out of the Executive Budget Act. Oh, well, it's not all upsides.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schauer.
Can we ask for that same information? We get that back? Oh. Senator Keel's question. I would like to know that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Okay, moving on. Next one's another airport, the Wasilla Airport this time.
Mm-hmm. So Chair Myers, the Wasilla Airport project is to extend the runway and expand the airport, which will allow for, you know, an expansion in the capacity, or the an extension of the runway allows for a different place to land. There's $14.1 million with a request from the community.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, just the same question about AIPL, but the other is there's mention of expansion to serve larger military aircraft. I know there is some significant defense facilities money in the bipartisan infrastructure law, and wondered if we had an opportunity to look at those funding categories for this, any expansion that serves our military aircraft.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'd have to get back to you on that. I mean, we're still in the understanding phase on a lot of aspects of the infrastructure bill. You know, certainly, you know, I've mentioned it several times, the Corps of Engineers projects certainly came in and provide additional funding for some of the projects here in the bond bill. You know, if we see things come up in future releases from the infrastructure bill that can supplement these projects, you know, some of those will come with match requirements, and some of these projects could be then used as match. But as we get that information, you know, we'll update the process with it. You know, we will, you know, inform the legislature of that. But I don't know of anything at this time that would cover this project from the infrastructure bill.
We do have Mr. Bender from the DOT on board if you want to ask him your question about how it relates to AIP.
If he's got the answer at his fingertips, Mr. Chairman, that would be great.
Thank you. Yep. Mr. Bender, we have you online.
I am here.
If you could put yourself on the record and address Senator Keel's question, if you need it restated, we can do that.
Sure, I'll do my best. This is John Bender. I'm Deputy Commissioner with Alaska Department of Transportation Public Facilities. What I understood the question to be was that whether these costs are AIP eligible, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Senator Keel, through the chair, this is not a state of Alaska-owned airport, so I'm not super familiar with their activity levels and whatnot. The items that I see listed on this capital request do have several things that are dependent upon the type of activity they have at that airport. And so things like extending your runway or adding lease lots, tie downs, all those kind of things are very dependent on the activity as far as whether the FAA will determine it's AIP eligible or not. If an airport typically does have those needs, has large aircraft trying to land that are unable to because of runway length or are not able to tie down because there's not apron space, that will typically be AIP eligible. But I'm not able to make that assessment for Wasilla at this time.
Okay, thank you. Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chairman, I can speak briefly to this just because I have a little more info on it. I'm flying out of there in Palmer. There was a discussion between Palmer and Wasilla airports, and the Palmer, I think they more want to have a quiet place. They're not really interested in expansion. It's kind of what I gather from the city of Palmer council and others that kind of in that area and how they lean. And I do mean that a little more politically because they seem to want to keep it. And I don't mean left and right. I mean like, you know, quiet. They don't want a lot of growth and expansion. Wasilla was like, yeah, bring it. And that's kind of where this is coming from. Their airport use does not have any real big facilities, no big commercial operations that are there. There's a couple small ones that do, you know, aircraft repair and things like that. There's no control tower. It'd have to be remote, most likely, for funding, for money. And there is an instrument approach that goes by, it's called an RNAV. Nobody cares about that. It's something I know. But Big Lake, which is actually a little dirt strip just a couple miles away, actually has a VOR attached to it. And there's all kinds of instrument approach training stuff going on there, but not at Wasilla. So it's pretty much a small general aviation airport. Their goal was to try to make it bigger so they could bring in some more commercial traffic, et cetera. Where it sits on AIP and usage, based on what John said, it probably would potentially qualify for it because they are trying to expand the apron and put in a commercial, passenger terminal plus bigger aircraft, you know, whether it's commercial or guard, et cetera. So it might actually qualify that based on the use I have. But right now, it is just a small, basically just general aviation with a couple little things to it. That's it. So it's an expansion thing. I don't know if that helps any, but for the context of the discussion, that's kind of where it sits right now. Questions I can answer, but that's what I've got.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no further questions. Moving on then to Juneau Access Road. Yeah. Senator, Bob gave you a promotion there. Mr. Steiniger.
Thank you, Chair Myers. These next two projects are actually directly managed by the Department of Transportation. So with permission of the chair, can I bring up the Commissioner of Transportation to provide some additional details? The Juneau Access Project is $25 million for improvement of transportation in and out of the capital city.
All right.
For the record, Ryan Anderson, Alaska Department of Transportation, Commissioner Designee. Through the chair, this project, Juneau Access, has been around. So it's considered a legacy project. It's been around, I think, probably since the early 1900s, that the concept of looking at Northland Canal and transportation options. The funds that are being asked for with the GO bond are really to look at exploring our options in the Northland Canal to improve the transportation in the corridor. In the past, I think all modes of transportation have been a part of that analysis. I don't think this would be any different. And really focused on, providing more options to people for transportation, reducing costs, both the state costs and user costs, as well as reducing travel times for people as well. We've heard a lot about that. So that's kind of the gist of the funds. These funds, with the state funds, it provides us a lot of flexibility to look at things versus the federal funds and look at problems and find solutions just because we don't have all the restrictions as the federal funds do. And then it also, it allows some flexibility there in the future if there is something found that, is federally eligible and these funds can be used as match. So that's the quick rundown on Juneau Access.
So if I'm just one second, just for my own information, if I'm understanding you correctly, basically this is for the study to get the project back up and running, and then potentially with the infrastructure money coming in, we could use some of that for actual construction in a couple of years. Is that correct?
Chair Myers, there's a scenario where that could be the case. I don't think that's been decided. That's one scenario.
Understood. Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a timing and process question for the executive branch. Can you sell and use the proceeds of general obligation bonds for studies, or do you have to use them to build the thing?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we believe that this project is bondable. That's, you know, this bill went through, you know, legal review prior to, you know, being introduced. Projects, you know, all projects require some level of planning work and coordination that is required aspects of the project. This bond, you know, would support eventually a construction project. I think, you know, possibly the commissioner might be able to speak to, you know, phases of a road project. He's much more the expert on that than I am. But, you know, any of these projects in a bond bill would have to involve some level of planning that would be a cost to the project overall.
Follow up? No?
I think I'll hold off for the time being. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Jarre?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So please tell me. I would ask that, with deference to my colleague to the right, I would ask the same question if this was the MATSU or anywhere else in the state. Please tell me I'm not voting for a $25 million chunk of money to study something that's going to be another, and I'm going to use it this time, bridge to nowhere, that I know it's expensive, but good Lord, I'll put it in the front of the project myself, give me $1 million, I'll do it, and I'm being a little facetious. I get that. There's things that are involved in this and phases, and we've, of course, made it very difficult and expensive to do a government project, but is this really, honestly, $25 million to study the project, kind of as an end cap to Senator Keel's question? Because this just gets difficult, guys. It does. I mean, the amount of money and saying that maybe not one piece of concrete's been, you know, laid down is a difficult pill to swallow when we're doing all these other things that are happening in our budgetary constraints. So I know that may be hard. You're kind of getting put in the spot, but that's what happens when you get hired and pay the big bucks, because we don't get paid the big bucks here to sit in that seat. I'd like to know a little more follow-up on that, because this is a tough one, guys. Not that I'm against the project and the access. I'm talking about concrete on the ground, steel being laid, not $25 million to study something. Please tell me that.
Yeah, through the chair, Vice Chair Schauer. Yeah, so, you know, the first thing that we do is we make sure we have all the work that's been done, because there's a lot of work that's been done on this on the Juneau Access Project in the past. And we would have no reason to reproduce any work. But we do have a process that we would go through. That's part of, you know, the DOT, and so we do have to start with the planning environmental work. Now, granted, when we have state funding, we have different requirements, and so we make the most of those to save money and to be cost effective with our analyses. But, you know, so that's really, you know, going through those steps, you know, the planning, the environmental, whatever was a determined option to move forward with, you know, the permitting, any right-of-way work, all those things will have to get done prior to any construction. But we would have every intent to put this money to good use and not to be using it for studies. I think we've done a lot of work in the past that a lot of that work's been done.
Sorry. It's not, Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I'm not laughing at you. May I make one final comment? I get that, gentlemen, and you don't have to comment to it. It's just we have to go in front of the constituents that you guys don't have to do. And I have to explain to them a case of, well, there goes 23,000 PFDs, right, to study something without laying a piece of concrete. You understand the dilemma we're in. I know that you guys do. But this is difficult when I look at some of these things and go, a bond package that we're putting on the credit card for $25 million without potentially putting down a single piece of concrete. This is not an easy thing to do, to go home and tell people that, you know, yeah, guys, we're going to spend $25 million on studying. So, I don't know, Mr. Chairman. This one gets tough for me, because we're not – I expect in a geo bond, if we're doing that, this is, to use the term, shovel ready, and we're doing stuff. And I understand there's a process, Commissioner, so you don't have to answer, because you guys are in a tough spot. But I honestly tell you, Mr. Chairman, like I said, go back to my original concept. A lot of this concerns me about bonding and what we're doing. And it's troublesome to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. All right. Any other comments on this project? Not currently. All right. Next one, moving up to Anchorage, northern access to the UMED district. Mr. Commissioner there.
Chair Myers. Yeah, this is another project that has some history to it. That goes back a little ways, but this is funding to, again, you know, get that project moving again. The nice thing with GL bond funds on, you know, a UMED project is the flexibility. You know, these funds could be handed off to a local municipality like the municipality of Anchorage or even the university to complete the job, which, you know, will have some benefits there, as well as being able to, you know, get things done quickly. You know, when we work in the federal funds in any urban area, you know, there's a lot of, you know, getting through all the processes when we talk about right-of-way and utilities. Those are all sequential steps that we have to go through with the federal funds, whereas when we use state funds, we can combine processes. And so we've seen, you know, processes to get to construction go from 3 to 7 years down to 2 to 3 years on a, you know, medium complexity job. So the advantages with a geobond for this project is that time savings, and then there'll be some cost savings because of the being able to coordinate those efforts.
All right. Questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a number of colleagues talk to me about this one. Can, you mentioned, Commissioner, the right-of-way and utilities and things. Does DOT have the right-of-way for this project at this point?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, my understanding is no.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, just if I can continue. And what is the status of the local municipal approval of the project?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I would have to get back to you on that. This one's, it's been a little while since it's been opened up. So we'll have to get back to you with that answer.
And then, Mr. Chairman, maybe one more, and that is, my understanding is that I grew up in Anchorage. I haven't lived there in a long time. How much road are we talking about for this price tag?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, let me get back to you with a good answer on that one. I do know there's been a lot of discussion about what the road looks like, you know, whether it's two lanes, four lanes, you know, has pedestrian overcrosses, those types of things. But let me get back to you on the link of that one.
Mr. Chairman, I will appreciate the commissioner's authoritative answer. I'm told that it's not measured in miles, but in hundreds of yards. So that's a little bit of a price tag concern.
Just looking at the authoritative Google Maps, I'm going to take a wild guess and say we're looking at roughly a mile, give or take a touch. So that, if that answers your question. So, all righty, no further questions on that one. Looks like we're out of DOT and moving on to the university for UAF, the Bartlett Hall and Moore Hall Modernization Project.
Yes, Chair Myers. So this is a $18.7 million project to make very significant upgrades to a lot of the systems at Bartlett and Moore Hall. I do know we have from the university, I believe Chad Hutchinson might be on the line or possibly right behind me.
I believe he's on the line because I don't see him there. Mr. Hutchinson, if you could put yourself on the record and give us a short pitch for this one.
Sure. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson. I'm the University of Alaska State Director. This project is familiar to this committee. It's Bartlett and Moore Hall. That's UAF's two largest residence halls. They house about 650 undergrad and graduate students. Each building is about 8 stories high. The long and short of it is the guts of those buildings are rotting from the inside out, and the quote I have in front of me is imminent total system failure of the sewer and water lines. It's a big issue. There's no doubt about it. I used to live in Moore Hall, and I can tell you that there was brown water coming from the third floor when I was there, so I can only imagine what it is now. So the good news is I listened to the conversation with this committee. We can start swinging the hammers immediately. We've already done the design work that's been funded. If this goes to a vote of the people and they agree with the general obligation bond, we can begin construction as soon as the next season after that vote. So that's the gist of Moore and Bartlett.
Senator Schauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Hey, Chad, it's good to hear your voice. Been a while since I've seen you. Hope you're still wearing, I guess, their lightning pins down, no longer Raptor pins up in Fairbanks, right?
That's right.
So a question for you just on the nuances of state funding, what portion we give towards the university versus what the university itself has, land grant, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any matching funds that the university is putting up? Are there anything from the local community that are part of this? And is this $18.65 million just from the state and that's the whole thing by itself? And I appreciate you telling us it's basically shovel ready. But I want to know that question because, you know, we get into this, well, the state's a quasi, or the university's a quasi state entity, but not really. So, and we have a lot of times where we're kind of shut out in what our authority or input is to what's happening with the university, and they kind of do their thing, but they expect us to give them money. So, which I don't really like giving money if we don't have authority and oversight, at least into what's happening. So can you give us maybe, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, a minute or so, just kind of a, how this sits in that rack and stack and where the university is from that funding perspective. I won't repeat the question if it makes sense, as long as you're good with it.
Senator Schauer, through the chair, I understood your question. So the answer is yes, it is all state funds. There is no federal match that exists out there. There is no private partnership for funding on this part of the actual construction of Moore and Bartlett. And if there's anything that we can do to make like better clarity from our perspective, please reach out to me and I'll make sure that we can get you that good information, because we always want to make our best case and we always want to make sure that we're as forthcoming as possible with any questions that you have.
Thanks, Chad. And just one quick follow-up. At the chairman said it was okay. He nodded his head yes. He screwed up. He trusted me. Can you just give me a highlight on if this wasn't to go through, so let's say this bond package fails, does the university have money set aside in its O&M budget or repair budget to do this, or what happens? So do you have a backup plan? Where would you get the money from? What will you do if this fails? Because obviously this sounds like a pretty, you know, almost a life and safety kind of one for water and other issues. So what's plan B?
Senator Schauer, through the chair, I think that similar to last year, we're very gracious for a lot of gratitude for the legislature. They put it in the capital budget, and I think that other avenues like that would be explored if the GO bond package is unable to go through. But it is President Pitney's highest need all throughout the entire system. And, you know, Moore and Bartlett in the summertime, they house wildland firefighters too. So it's a big, it's important for the interior when we have our fire seasons that those firefighters are taken care of also.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now we know why the plumbing's in trouble. Mr. Chairman, a question, a serious question for Mr. Hutchinson. It looks like a total plumbing replacement and some of the lighting, I guess, that built in the 60s. Are we going to at risk of seeing in a couple years' time an electrical project come in or a mechanical project come in? Does this bring these two residence halls all the way up to speed?
Senator Keel, through the chair, that's exactly right, is that we're going to completely demolish the stacked restroom that, you know, 4x4, 8 stories high. It starts there. It's going to be rebuilding the plumbing, the electrical, the ventilation systems, making sure that it's code compliant. Like you said, this is 50 plus years with massive erosion. They're experiencing failures on a frequent basis, and so our facilities team really scrambling to keep this in a way that a standard that our students need to have, frankly, and in looking in the next 50 years about how we're going to position ourselves with on-campus housing for the future. So the answer is yes, that will also be taken care of, and our plan is to make it something that our students expect for decades to come.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Schauer?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Chad, a very serious question because we have one other ringer in the room here. And I approach this with the most solemn attitude, but I need to know, are you coming back for the softball game?
Senator Schauer, through the chair, I am. I have all my softball gear here, and I will coordinate with you on the Senate team.
Okay, just checking. Thank you.
Oh, very good.
All right. Well, I do have to say I don't think we use the phrase total system failure very often, so that does tend to perk the ears up. Also, I did stay in both of these halls, so Mr. Hutchinson, if you want to know which room so you can put up a plaque if this goes through, we can do that.
I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
All righty. I believe we've reached the end of our project list. We do have just a couple of minutes left on the time if we have any other questions or comments on the package as a whole. We do not. All right. With that, thank you, Mr. Scheininger, for taking the hot seat. Thank you to the rest of our testifiers for answering all of our questions here. And with that, we're going to conclude our meeting for today. We'll set aside this bill, come back to it soon. Our next meeting currently is Tuesday, February 1st. We'll be hearing and potentially probably moving SB 168, donations for DOT signage. The amendment deadline for that bill is going to be Monday, January 31st at noon, and that puts us adjourned at 2:59 p.m. Thank you.